Welcome to Prague Will Find a Way, your friendly neighborhood alfresca podcast, Progcast. I'm Jonathan Block.
And I'm Jay Valade.
And today, we've talked about this venue numerous times, and we're actually there. We're here in Fairfield, Connecticut, in front of the Warehouse,
Fairfield Theater Company.
Fairfield Theater Company. Check it out online. Lots of great shows. And we're here because tonight, John Lodge.
From the Moody Blues.
Blues, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, inductee. He's performing,
which includes John Davison from Yes as one of his special guests, singers. He's going to sing a couple songs.
Four songs. Three songs from Days of Future Past.
And one other.
One other classic John Lodge song. Well, it's funny because John Lodge has three huge tunes that everybody knows. Well, two everybody knows, which is Ride My Seesaw, and then I'm Just a Singer in a Rock and Roll Band, and then the third one would be Isn't Life Strange. But he actually has a lot of other kind of known songs, too.
They are.
Very, very good. But those are the ones that people most identify with. But this particular show is celebrating what was the 50th anniversary. We're a little past it now. The 50th anniversary of
Days of Future Past.
So he's playing that entire album in one set, I believe. And then another set is his not only Moody songs, but solo career. He has had a number of solo albums.
Yeah, but I think most of it is Moody's.
There's a few songs. He's got one song I know he plays often from the Blue Jays album, which was the album he did in 75, I believe, with Justin Hayward during their 6-year hiatus, which is kind of funny because at that point in time, no bands took hiatus.
Yeah, a 6-year hiatus was a big thing.
It's almost like the sidelong epic started coming, and they're like, you know what? We just don't want to be involved in this. And then they sat it out till punk came.
Yeah, because Seven Sojourn was what, 1972?
72.
So they like cut it off right when Prague was really finding a way.
Exactly. They did not want it to. No, just joking. But they all did solo albums. Some really interesting solo albums too. But it was a 6-year break. They came back together in 77-ish, 78, and did the Octave album, which actually that was like, your favorite album is often the one you was your entree in the band. I remember hearing Days of Future Past on the radio in the late 60s. That song was on the radio all the time. But Octave came out in 78, and my brother got it. And I was like, wow, this album's cool. You know, this album's really cool. It's funny because I mentioned this in a different video, but the sound of that late 70s, that kind of coldest sound, they've got it on that album, Tormato, and then there were three, same thing. So
my intro to the Moody's was in 81 with Long Distance Voyager. So that was the first.
New keyboard player, Mike Binder.
Mike Binder was gone, and Patrick Meraz was the
in the captain's chair.
Yeah, so Long Distance Voyager, Patrick Meraz joins the band, was my first foray into the Moody Blues. Okay. As we discussed with John Davison, that's when I discovered that the Moody Blues had these five different people who are writing different songs, different singers, different time signatures and tempos for each person. They had a very tailored sound to each one of them, but then they came together as this one big conglomeration as the Moody Blues, but made these albums which gave it such variety.
Yeah, I mean we haven't really what's the birth of Prague, you know, and we talked off camera about that once, and it's like, to me, the Moody's are kind of above that. I've been trying to articulate this somehow because they're really before, okay?
They are before.
And
Days of Future Past is that kind of moment for
them. Right, but even more so to me is the next one, which is Search of the Lost Chord, which was, to your point about so many different styles because different singers. The thing about the Moody's is that it's like, it's funny because we also talked about the 80s. It was more, you know, the pop kind of prog. Well, actually, the Moody's was like song-based prog, you know?
Oh, it was.
It was like we wrote songs, but pushing the envelope for the orchestration, and not the Days of Future Past orchestration, but like the Mellotron orchestration and just the arrangements and all the different things that they did to take what 98% of the bands at that time were just recording the song, and that was it.
Yeah.
The song was in there, which is funny because now this is why John and particularly Justin go around the world with just a guitar, because that's how they wrote the songs.
It
isn't like a Close to the Edge where
you need all the accoutrements to make the song work.
You need it because at the heart of it is are these great songs that stand by themselves. They just are enveloped in this sound and of that era, which is amazing.
But it's also, that's kind of the prog moment of the Moody Blues, is they have these very these core songs. Their music is based on these songs, which are the core of the music.
Right.
But they're embellished by all this either orchestration or the mellotron or whatever. And the way they tied the songs together and the spoken word aspects, all those sort of things are what made them prog. Because if you listen to some of the Moody Blues song-based songs, you wouldn't say that's prog at all.
No.
But it's the way they're presented, and they you pull it all together under this envelope or this kind of thing that you put it together as an album, and you link it and you throw that orchestration on it, it changes into something different.
Well, I think you said the key word album. They thought a lot of times in terms of an album, and for that era, right? You think of obviously Dates of Future Past, but also Search of the Lost Chord. It's an album. Like, you listen to it from front to back.
You do.
And there's a package to it, and the successive ones as well. I'd say probably up till the first album of the 70s, Question of Balance, right? That one was, I feel, is more kind of like individual song oriented than every good boy did.
Tied things together.
Well, there was a sound and an environment to it that was definitely.
There was the same producer.
Well, exactly. Yep. And, you know, it's interesting too that, you know, Octave is a new era, no mellotron, right? It's also, it's just everything since now. It's funny because Patrick Mraz was not joining yet, but Mike Pinder had already set it up. Like, well, no, it's synths now. It's not the mellotron. Yeah, of course, I mean, it's so layered with Mraz.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely.
You know, so layered.
Yes. So, speaking of the album that they are going to perform here tonight, Days of Future Past, I was reading up on that, and it's just kind of funny how it started out as like a Decca Records sampler to illustrate how the sound system works. So they got the Moody Blues and said, oh, we'll do that. And that's why there's so much orchestration on it. And there's so much movement in the music from the darks to the lights.
Well, I thought that they told them, or at least the producer Tony Clark told them that we're going to do a rock and orchestral version of the New World Symphony by Dvorak or something like that. And then they did the whole thing, and then they presented it to the record label, and it was like too late at that point. You know, it was like, oh my God, this isn't what we thought. And of course, it was.
Then it became
this huge success, and yes, in many ways, opened the door that there were listeners that would embrace more experimental type of music like that.
But also just the whole idea of the album being
a
day in the life, sort of.
Right.
If you
will. Right. Well, yeah, and then the band set themselves up to have to write songs to somewhat fit that narrative.
Right.
But she got great songs out of it, and great songs from multiple writers, right? There was everybody wrote.
Yeah. It's very.
And then they were the original Yes, right? They went on their hiatus and they all did solo albums. But I think they all did at least two. And then Justin and John did an album. You know, it's interesting.
Yeah, I did not keep up with that aspect of it.
No, but it's also interesting. I'm not going to say parallels with Yes, but right, like the album covers. Same
kind of feel.
Well, in the Threshold, I mean, they had their album. I mean, another bit of trivia, which if you're watching this podcast, most people probably know that, you know, King Crimson was originally signed to be on Threshold.
Oh, they were.
And they did. And they did record some tracks with Tony Clark producing.
And
I think some of those, the way they tell it, they didn't know what they were getting. And then, you know, my impression is he was trying to be a producer to the band, and they were like, no, because they ended up producing the album themselves.
Yeah.
And that's really, to me,
I took some of the rawness over.
Right. That's the perspective of the Moody Blues.
The precursor to
But they weren't coming out saying, we're doing this music movement. Da, da, da.
Yes.
Person identified as part of this that is underground.
The new thing. Yes.
They were part of that underground late 60s thing, whereas by that point, the Moody Blues were already in what at that time would have been the stratosphere for that time.
Yeah.
So
I was surprised as I was going back through the catalog how much they put out in such a short period of time. I
mean, every band did that, right?
No, but it was crazy.
Yeah.
It was like 1969, they had like two albums, and 70, they had like two albums, and 71, it was just bang, 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 bang.
Musicians are so lazy now, you know? It's got to be 10,
that's,
10
that's
years.
That's what it is.
10 years, 10 years between albums.
But
so you can also tell how they, like, you know, you burn out then, but rightly, yeah. But five year after year, plus the touring, and you also have to write the songs.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good thing that... I think that's probably part of the reason why they could be as prolific as they were, because you have
four to five
songs. Yeah. Graham Edge wrote a little, not as much as everybody else.
Yeah, but he wrote all those. Didn't he do all the poems?
I don't know if he, well,
or just he recited
that. He recited them. I don't know if he actually wrote them.
Okay.
He did write some of the, for, I know, I believe he wrote like Procession, the beginning of Question of Balance, but I'm not in entirely sure. But you know, if you're only on the hook for two or three songs, you're probably writing a lot more, and then they all took the best,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Hmm.
So, but they never strayed from, they never did an epic, you know, you never got everything was always in the,
that's what I was saying, like they're the Moody Blues from a prog standpoint weren't all about keyboard solos or guitar solos or anything. It was song bass with kind of this interweaving sound that made it more epic than if you took the songs out on themselves.
Right.
However, their greatest hits album, This Is the Moody Blues album, is fantastic. And that flows together, too.
That was probably the first Moody Blues album I bought. And, I mean, it's just so... The segues, like the thought that went into sequencing that album is just amazing, because it just works so well.
Yeah, it does.
It just works
like it's
so
not a greatest hits
well.
Album.
It's not. It's like,
it's like
just
it was made that
yeah.
way.
Although, you know, it's funny because when you get to the Patrick Mraz years, like Long Distance Voyager, sometimes I've been like, I'd love to hear them put a box set out and one version is just the keyboard mix, but there's no breaks between the songs. So it's like, it's just this one long, because it's got to be like some of the songs, there's like 10 keyboard things.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very, very cool.
It is very,
very cool.
And that did draw me in.
Yeah.
Because of the sounds that were on that album.
Well, it was so modern at the time, too. It was like, it sounded of its time. And it was like, wow.
But they were the old guys.
They were the old guys.
It's like 1981.
Oh, I know. They're in their 30s by then, man. They were totally old. They were...
Well, compared to the quote-unquote new wave, they were really... You know, they were the elder statement.
They were no different than any other bands that got railed in the punk years, you know?
Still... That album came out, and it was a gigantic hit for them. It was all over them.
It totally was. Yeah, I don't remember people really slagging them. Nobody was wearing I Hate Moody Blues shirts.
No. Well, they kind of have avoided all of that, because they're not like in that prog echelon that people put.
Right.
Even though they are prog, they're not in that zone because of... Their approach was not in the same as I was saying.
Yeah, and like unlike a lot, you know, there was also not a lot of drama with that band. Well, I mean, that was public, like, and they weren't, you know, they weren't really flamboyant on stage either. You know, like people don't, they're not a band that people talk about their live stuff that much.
Right.
But they didn't put, you know, they put out a live album. You know, I think what was it called? Live Plus Five.
Oh, right.
But I believe that was put out after Seven Sojourn. So that was a 69 like, or a 70. Right. That was a bookend. But then they never put out another live album until the, you know, whatever the orchestral one in the Red Rocks.
Yeah.
Ray Thomas was still alive at that point. But they're not a band that you talk about. There's not a lot. I think they put out one of those huge box sets. Yeah. I think it was called Timeless Flight. And I think there was live
stuff
on
that. Yeah, yeah.
And also when they re-released some of their, like, I know the re-release of Octave whatever the last remaster was, has like two or three live songs. It may be from a show that's on Timeless Flight, because I think it was one of those later shows.
But speaking of them live, I did see them get inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Ah.
Went out to Cleveland.
What year was that? 2018?
I believe that's when it was.
Okay.
So I
who else was that year?
Cars. It was Bon Jovi, Dire Straits, Nina Simone.
You've been to a few of these, right? Because you saw Roxy Music get inducted.
Roxy
Music. Okay.
Next year. Yeah. Okay. It was, but it was really kind of fun because of that. But I went with some buddies of mine from high school who we went because the Cars and Dire Straits were getting in. Well, I wanted to see the Moody's too, but they didn't particularly. But after the show was all done, they were like, the Moody Blues was the best performance of the night. And they were kind of shocked because they thought, oh, the Moody Blues is going to be the kind of this mellow thing. And they were like, they were the best band up there, which was kind of fun because you had, you know, Bon Jovi and the Cars and whoever. But, you know, we didn't get a lot of the bands that year didn't perform, like Dire Straits didn't perform. And
now, all of the original members were there, but except Ray Thomas. Ray Thomas had passed.
But it was fun. I don't think Mike Pinder played with them, but he was on stage for the induction.
Right. Yeah. Denny Lane was.
Denny Lane was there too. I actually ran into Denny Lane in the airport on my way.
Oh, really?
That was a cool little moment.
Yeah.
He was a very nice guy.
Yeah.
Most of the Moody's are gone now.
Justin and obviously John, and we're here for the John Lodge. So people are starting to line up
because doors are opening very soon.
Do you have a favorite Moody's album, or do we even want to?
I think my favorite Moody's album is Long Distance Voyager because that was my first intro. And then because I got into the This Is album, most of their albums didn't grab me as much because I knew all the hit songs.
Right.
So that I wasn't jumping into the others as much. But I think Question of Balance would be my second after that. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know why.
That's all right.
Something about the way it flows.
So actually, if I could pick anything, this is probably the one band where I will allow us to pick a greatest hits thing because of everything we said about this is the Moody Blues. It's almost an album in itself rather than a collection.
And a double album.
Even though it is very prog. But if we just take the proper albums, then I would say my first has got to be In Search of the Lost Chord. There's something about that album. There's so many great songs on that. And then I'll pick Octave because I like Octave. I just love that album. I do. So those would be the two albums. And probably the third, believe it or not, would be either Long Distance Voyager, which is just an amazing album, the whole thing. I even like the Ray Thomas.
The Veteran Cosmic Rocker?
Yeah, the trilogy, the Ray Thomas trilogy. I love Ray Thomas. I think, you know, his solo albums are amazing. It's just he's got that British melancholy countryside sound. He had that down.
Who wrote Melancholy Man?
That was, I think that was Pinder. Okay. I think that's a Mike Pinder song.
All right. I'm just saying, because you brought it up.
No, but a lot of his songs are like, you know, And the Tide Rushes In and... Yeah. I mean, so many of their songs are melancholy, right?
Yes.
But although To Our Children's Children's, however many generations, is an amazing album as well. So,
well, that's the thing. Of those seven albums, the one they're playing tonight is not necessarily my favorite.
Right. I mean, I'm sure but it's cool to hear.
As they move on from there
to
Seven Soldiers, all of them kind of have the same vibe to me.
Right.
It's like another chapter of the same book.
I mean, if we had the opportunity to talk to John Lodge, I would have asked him, is he planning on doing other albums in a similar thing? Or is this just, you know, there's something special about this album? So because it is what it is. So I guess it would depend. I can see that because it would, you know, if you got two or three songs on an album, then you have to do other people's songs. Not that Aida has an issue with that, but there you go. John can come in. John Davison can come in and sing away. Sing away. So again, we're at the Fairfield Theater Company, the Warehouse parking lot.
Yeah.
So Prague will find a way.
If you want it to.